I am a Black woman, and I'm proud of the life that, or what I've accomplished in terms of getting to this point in terms of my corporate career. But Alejandro, that friction can show up in terms of other people only see the surface part of me. They see Black and they see woman. So if I'm shopping in a store, you know, this tendency to be followed or to be asked 25 times, do I need help? Which isn't really help what they're offering. It's more, why are you here?
Welcome to Awakening Lives, a podcast of the Spirituality Network. We seek to cultivate the awakened life through contemplative living and action. This podcast is part of our Jedi series, today with a focus on fostering inclusion. And joining me today is Rhonda Burns. Rhonda, would you like to share a little bit with our audience about yourself? What would you like them to know?
Hello, Alejandro and audience. It is a pleasure to be with you. If I were going to describe myself from a assignment perspective, let me say it this way. I'm a divine spirit sent into the earth, and part of my assignment is to make and hold space for others to be and live their most authentic and best lives. That is true in my corporate career. It has been true. It is just, but that's something that I now understand, but it has been a through thread through my entire career. It is a part of all of my personal relationships, and also present in terms of where I find myself giving back to the community. So I feel like I am in alignment when I think about the articulation of what you're trying to do here through this work by being with you today. From a background perspective, I'm a Gen Xer. I'm a Black woman who hails from Brooklyn, New York, and was transplanted from the big city into the Midwest during my middle school years. I come from very humble beginnings, and I'm the result of a two-parent household. My parents will celebrate their 56th wedding anniversary in a few months. I come from a strong Christian tradition, and I'm a middle birth order kid. So I have an older sister and a younger sister, but I present like the oldest, and it makes my older sister furious, but it is the case. I am not partnered, not a bio mom, but I have four godchildren that I absolutely adore, three boys and one girl. And I have a two-year-old fur kid named Teddy. He's a mini golden doodle, and I love him to bits. And in my spare time, I love to read. I like to do a lot of walking with Teddy, and I love traveling. That's me.
Wonderful. So I've known you for a while, and I don't think I'd ever heard you use the phrase creating space before in terms of what you do, but I absolutely love it because that's really what we try to do at the Spirituality Network as well. So how did you come to land on that phrase for yourself?
I've been really trying to more succinctly articulate in a non-corporate speak kind of way, describe what my assignment is. And I wanted it to be something that felt authentic to me, not just the work that I'm assigned to do at the office. And that was the way that it felt most natural. And then I started socializing it with people who are who've known me for a long time. And it really resonated with them about who I am authentically. And so that's been how I landed there. But it was just really a journey of not being able to just lead with my title, really leading with who I am.
I love it. And, you know, I'm a little bit of a rebel at heart. And
yes.
So I appreciate that you were seeking a non-corporate way to talk about what you do and who you are. I think that just really speaks to who you are. And I'm thrilled you came to land in that place.
And it's been interesting, Alejandro, even to the point of not associating myself with the company. Like it's not that the company has done anything wrong. It's that I'm learning that we are too attached to what we do and our titles and lead with those spaces, even associating our own identities with where we work and with what we do. And I wanted to really be intentional about shifting that for myself. So it's showing up in, you know, how I define myself, how I frame communications as well. So I feel like it's a journey that my soul is seeking, and I'm just leaning into it.
Wonderful. Well, I will tell you, as a still kind of recently retired person, that coming to that understanding before you actually retire is good work to do, because so much of our identity is wrapped up in the work that we do, that it's a bit of a transition when you move to not having that title to define you anymore.
Yeah, it moves away from that positional thing, of that positional space, especially when you're, if you're an executive, or, I mean, I think that's just true holistically for people, but in our shared space as an executive, you really, if you can lead in that way, and then all of a sudden when you're out of that space and there isn't that positional engagement, and you can't lead with that, I don't, not knowing who you are, that can be, without associating your title and what you do corporately, I can imagine it would be jarring. And so for me, it's just been more about, who are you holistically? Who are you outside of this? Because I think to me, it was more an inner work. I just, doing the work and going within has been really important to me. I think during COVID and coming out of COVID has been just a focus area for me. And it wasn't anything I did on purpose. It just emerged.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the, there have been tremendous shifts as a result of COVID. And I think one of the really good things is it cause people to sit back and look and reevaluate things about what's important, what matters to them, who are they. And so that's, I think, something that a lot of people have done, and something we should be grateful for.
Amen. And I think that there's, you know, oftentimes when we think about things, that there was a lot of tragedy during that period, but one of the things that I have been really on a quest for is, what's the treasure? What can I take from this that changes me, that elevates me, that helps to really align me more authentically with what I believe God and the divine sent me into the earth to do? And so that, to your point, is a gift.
Yeah, yeah. So the focus of our conversation today is around fostering inclusion. And I'm curious, how do you take the notion of fostering inclusion and mix it with that creating space? What's the connection for you there?
So when I think about fostering inclusion and holding and making space, I really think that it's about, because I think everyone knows how it feels to be in a space but not connected, to be in a space and not feel like you belong, to be in a space to have something to offer that, based on packaging or whatever the case may be, your, what you have to offer isn't as easily given out of fear or whatever the situation or scenario may be. And so for me, fostering inclusion means that as a colleague or as a leader, that part of my responsibility is to really create an environment on my team, in my workplace, that allows people to be their best and authentic self, to take the energy that they are using to compartmentalize, to make themselves smaller, to comport themselves in ways that society would say that you have to be if you look like this, or you have to be if your gender is that. All of those things, taking that energy and creating a space where people can use all that energy that they have in an authentic and focused way. Because I think that when you don't have to think about or worry about those things, you know that you're heard, valued, and respected for the difference that you bring. When you know that you belong, that energy that you're using to cover can really solve amazing business problems. And I think that it can also mean that we can solve more problems in our communities, in our country, and in our world. But we're so individualistic, and I think not really aware of the power of the collective human experience, that we're missing those opportunities. So when I think about fostering inclusion, I think about ways that we can really achieve something together and in an authentic, without people having to give up their individual and authentic individual identities, Alejandro. I think that's where I think fostering inclusion and holding space connects for me, because I think too often people are kind of really being forced into these small articulations of themselves. And I want more of that authentic, because that's big. That is, and I think that that's best, but I think it starts when they're little. And so by the time we get them in the corporate spaces, it can be amazing, but it can also be challenging. But I have the assignment of putting the cultural norms, values, mindsets, and behaviors, and really maximizing those for the betterment of the whole. And also, I think in a way that helps the company achieve its objectives. And in this case, I work for a company that has a noble mission in the community. So I have no disconnect, no friction in terms of what they're assigned to do versus how that supports what I believe I'm assigned to do. So for me, that's how I would describe fostering inclusion and holding space is.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. So there are two words that you used that I want to specifically call out. One okay. is energy. And I'm mm-hmm. so glad you called that out. For me, I feel like I've led so much of my life as a chameleon or with a mask to be the kind of person that society wanted me to be. And I came to realize how much energy it takes to hold that mm-hmm. mask in place. And that's energy that I'm not using for a more productive purpose. So when mm-hmm. I'm able to put that mask down, I'm able to totally be free to do whatever is needed of me without having to worry about what someone thinks about me, which is a yes. beautiful place to be and a beautiful place to live into all of the gifts that God endowed me with. Yes. So I love that you brought up energy. The second word I wanted to call out was friction. I'm curious, can you say more about why you choose that word when you're talking about inclusion?
I use the word friction because when you're in a situation where people have different lived experiences, different backgrounds, different perspectives, point of view, come from different socioeconomic backgrounds, how that affects how you view the world, it affects how you relate to others. And so sometimes when you come together in any given space, whether that's the workplace, whether that's in the community, there are often times when the differences of our lenses and our views is going to create friction. And that's just a part of being in any space where there is difference present. It can cause friction. And the tendency, the human tendency, is to lean away. So when friction is present, sometimes you lean away. So I'm going to go to my respective corners, or you lean in and it's not handled productively. So for me, friction is a natural part of diversity. Friction can be a natural part of the path to inclusion. And friction is always present when you're growing. So I talked about my journey of really not connecting my identity or my who with my do, if you will, like who I am with what I do, it means that there had to be a point where there was some friction around how I saw myself. And that, and I could have leaned away from that, but in the pandemic, there was nowhere else to go. You can only see your, you know, you can only sit with yourself, which is also probably why the divorce rate was so high. And it was also why so many negative situations came out there, you know, higher instances of domestic violence or those kinds of things happening, because there's nowhere else to go. The friction of who you are and the world you're experiencing. And so that shows up for us in positive ways. It can also show up for us in negative ways. So to me, I use the word friction because whenever there's challenge in place, wherever it comes from, there's a rub that happens between those existences, and you have to decide how you're going to respond to it. My goal in the work that I do is to get people more comfortable in the space where friction exists, to hold space and grace for themselves and for other people, to learn how to practice mindsets to help you navigate that more effectively, like curiosity and empathy, building trust, working on bias mitigation and interruption as a lifestyle, not just something you do once, but that you do always, and that you really learn how to be more effectively an ally for yourself and for other people. So that is kind of how I think about the concept of friction.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, how does the concept of friction show up differently, perhaps, in a corporate setting versus a social or a family setting?
So in a, I think in a corporate setting, how that friction can show up is in terms of how people choose the members of their teams, how they go about leading their teams. You can, the friction, think about today, Alejandro, I'll use this as an example. There are five generations that are at work today. We've got our traditionalists, we've got our boomers, we've got our Xers, millennials, and our Gen Z, and Alpha will be coming up soon. And when you think about how different each of those generations are, how they view the world, how they view themselves in it, what their expectations are from work and from their employer, those differences can create friction. And so to me, that what that winds up looking like is, you know, for me, Gen Xer, you know, just get stuff done. Let's just get it done. But my millennial person that reports to me has a lot of questions, needs a lot of context, needs to understand the big picture and the why. And for me, it's just not letting that, or assuming ill intent, because that person needs more context than I need, or has a lot more questions. We can assume intent. We can assume that they, you know, that they don't trust me, or there's a lot of assumption that can go in, and it's just perspective. And so as a leader, and an inclusive leader, really understanding the people around you and really getting into a spot where you're into a place where you don't view leadership and engagement of other people as a, everybody bends to me, but really learning how to really find out what your people need and then hold space for that, navigate and lead them individually in ways that maximizes their potential so that you can achieve more together. So friction can show up like that in terms of how you lead. So I think that those are examples, but it can also show up in terms of biases around, you know, who is, who should get an assignment, or who, what you need on your team, or you're forming a team to achieve an assignment, but because you have, you've always set in this part of the organization. You may not have perspective about how this part of the organization over here can add value to achieving your objectives. So there's so many ways that our experiences, how we view the world, can shape how we engage others, and that can create friction. And it can be small friction, but then sometimes it can be big, and it can have negative implications for what a team or a business unit can achieve. And that is what we're working to change.
Yeah. What about on the more social side, like when
social friends
or family?
Yeah, well, for me, that that can show up in a lot of different ways. So I'll pivot to an example. I am a Black woman, and I'm proud of the life that or what I've accomplished in terms of getting to this point in terms of my corporate career. But Alejandro, that friction can show up in terms of other people only see the surface part of me. They see Black and they see woman. So if I'm shopping in a store, this tendency to be followed or to be asked 25 times, do I need help? Which isn't really help what they're offering. It's more, why are you here? That friction shows up. It shows up in, it can show up in how we assess other people, how we treat others, how we allocate resources, institutional. There's lots of different ways that friction that can show up, and that we're either not doing a really good job of addressing because it can be hard to really own what biases and big eyes and little U's, and assessing more value on this group or that area or this type of work. All of those different things that we can kind of do to one another can create friction, and it can be expressed more directly in social and community situations than I experience in corporate spaces. Now, I do understand that it can and is happening more directly in corporate spaces. I happen to be fortunate enough to work in an environment where that is not the case. But I feel like I've experienced more direct friction based on stereotypes and prejudices and other things in my social environment.
Yeah. And I think it's probably even more true in a social media setting.
Yes.
Where you don't have a relationship already with someone, but you're interacting with people and based on very little information. And we could quickly go to a place of creating a space that is not welcoming and not inclusive.
And I'm really intentional too in this, in social, because parasocial relationships are interesting. And I think that because people are not having face-to-face relationships, but it's more typing and more computer-based or based relationships, you might say something in a way that you wouldn't say it if that person was standing in front of you, that you make assumptions and leaps in terms of that you wouldn't make in physical relationships that you're in proximity to. So I've really been really more intentional about really looking at social media in terms of how it serves my life, and then making sure that as I'm engaging with people, that I'm really thoughtful that there is a human on the other side of that, and to be mindful in my articulation and making sure that whatever I'm saying or however I'm saying it, that I could stand 10 toes down on that. And if that person were, in a relation, if I were in direct proximity to that person, and that has, and I didn't have a problem with that, but my intentionality about it is high. One of the things I guess I would say, Alejandro, is that I'm in a phase of what am I giving attention and intention to? And I'm really making sure that in a social media in a social media space, that I'm not giving it too much attention, too much room in my life. But when I am, that my intention and my attention are high to make sure that I'm aligned with who I want to be in the internet world, but also in the real world.
I love it. I think that's really good advice for us. And as you were talking, it occurred to me that within, let's just look at three different spheres. There's a corporate setting, a family setting, and a social media setting. The risk of loss is different with each one of them. The sense of freedom of how you engage is different with each one of them. And so the dynamics are, you have to, what may be appropriate in one setting may not mm-hmm. work in another. So you just have to be really sensitive to, you know, again, your intention and attention on for each of those different environments, because they may be different.
Yes, and they absolutely are different. And what I would also say is like when I think about my family, I have an older sister and a younger sister. Alejandro, we cannot be more different people than, you line the three of us up and you see similar features, but we are completely different women. And so how I engage my parents is centers them in the sense of really understanding who, trying to do as much as I can to understand, honor, and respect who they are without not honoring myself or dishonoring myself or them. And so that requires high intent and attention. And too often, because we're really centering ourselves all of the time, giving context for the orbit you're in, for the community that you're in, for the mode that you're in, isn't always as accurate as it needs to be. So when I'm engaging with my family, I'm very thoughtful about their lived experiences, how I've experienced them, and how to really make the most and how to get the most out of the interaction. We are a family that comes from, a strong Christian tradition. And I've deconstructed a lot of that, Alejandro, in terms of my own personal beliefs today. And I'm intentional and give strong attention to how I articulate or express that in the context of my family environment in a way I don't have to do if I'm in certain communities and social media or in communities with people who are aligned with where I am on my spiritual journey today. But if you just want to express, then you're going to create, and I want to have a relationship with my family. So right. To stay in a relationship with my family will mean that I have to think about them and honor myself at the same time. So there will be certain periods where I will know that I'm not energetically in a space where I can do that. So I don't. I'll be on set to repeat here. It's just inclusion requires strong intentionality. And so that is what I'm that's what I know for sure. And a lot of times we want to be on bypass and don't have to give that intention. But to have the world and the relationships and the communities that I think we all want, you have to be intentional.
Yeah. A lot of the people that I talk to have also deconstructed their faith mm-hmm. just like I have, and I've reconstructed it into something that works for me. And one of the things that I try to do when I'm engaging with people who perhaps have not deconstructed their faith mm-hmm. is to keep thinking in my mind, where they are is absolutely appropriate for them, and their truth is their truth, and I can honor that even if it doesn't work for me anymore.
Yes. And even if I don't agree and it doesn't work for me, I can honor that. That is absolutely, and I have to practice a degree of that. No, not a degree, a lot of that with in the family space.
Yeah. Yeah. So perhaps we could turn just a moment to the impact of inclusion or perhaps non-inclusion, and specifically for how it lands on people who are in in-groups and out-groups. So, you know, let's talk about first, if you're creating an environment where inclusion is not present, what is the impact on the out-group to that kind of an environment?
So I think there's several different ways that that can express itself. What, in terms of the out group, we're not getting, that leader is not getting the most out of, they're not maximizing the potential of that out group. And not maximizing the potential of the team that you're charged with to achieve business outcomes is negligent. And for me, it's and diversity without inclusion is harmful. So for me, it really is a thing of the out group can either be actively disengaged. They can be more passive participants, which doesn't serve them and doesn't serve the group. And it also can affect people's esteem, how they show up in the world, how they move in the world. And for me, that isn't something that I think any leader worth their salt wants to do, or to how they want to affect people. So I think from an out-group perspective, it can be negative, or you can just have a revolving door in terms of that talent will leave your team to go to another, or leave the company to go to another, and the cost and the ramp up time, all of the things that we think about when you think about attrition and turnover, it doesn't have to be. And so to me, I think that there's definite downside to the out group. And I think the cost, the impact that it has on people from just an empirical business perspective, but also from a heart perspective, from a contribution perspective, it's not serving the company, the team. I don't think it serves our communities.
So it's funny, you were talking about the impact on the out group, but you're also talking about the impact on the in-group as well, because there's loss there that they are not receiving the blessings and the benefits of because they are minimalizing the out-group.
Yes. That's what I would say.
Yeah. So to include them, I think there are a couple different ways, maybe extreme ways, that we could do that. One is to integrate a group of people into your community. The other is to assimilate the group into the community. And so I have a personal bias against assimilation because of my own lived experience, but I'm curious, from your perspective, how do you see the differences between integration and assimilation?
Integration allows Alejandro to be Alejandro, not to be Alex. Inclusion allows me to really be the big Leo fire energy that I am without being overwhelmed or consumed by it, to hold space for the bigness that is my personality without having to feel like, in order to communicate or to be not perceived as, the angry, too big energy Black woman in this space, that I can really express, who I am, because sun, moon, and rising, Alejandro's fire signs, all of mine. So you're going to get this fire no matter, you know, no matter what. It allows me to show up. Integration says that you can bring your cultural background, your lived experiences to the table, and they are honored and they are seen. You don't have to pretend. They're seen, they're heard, and they're valued. And assimilation is different in that there is no value in what is different, only in what is same. And that is covering, that is masking, and that is assuming that the in-group norms are the norms, that there is no value in anything else, which means you're going to not have any meaningful new ideas that, and it also creates an echo chamber, all of these negative things that can occur, happen when assimilation is the outcome we're looking to achieve. But integration says we can be different, see those differences and honor them. And then let's navigate the friction. And then let's do something great together. Let's achieve something great together. It doesn't require you to change the way you, you don't have to be Alex in the workplace. You can be Alejandro. And then that energy that you are using to try to project what is American, perceived American, or whatever those norms are, you can just be. And there is something beautiful about an ability, a space that allows us to simply be, to know that we're seen, is what I feel like part of what my job is, to really see and to see the people around me, value that, and help them to just be, and let's do some great stuff together.
You know, and I'm so thrilled of a word that I did not hear you say, which is tolerated.
Oh, I don't like that.
I don't like it either. I mean, how miserable is it to be tolerated? You know,
we want to be celebrated.
Yeah, you exactly, because we should be celebrated.
Yes.
We are beautiful creations that deserve to be celebrated.
Yes. And it's just one of the things I think is just, we are not valuable because of any of X, Y, and Z. We're just valuable because we are.
Yeah.
And that is getting to a place where we see other people that way, but also really just settling into that for myself. It's just, you know, if you sit with that, hopefully for me, it makes me want to like cry a little bit, because it's like, I'm holding space now for myself. And Alejandro, I think about the little girl, you know, all the things that I navigated coming up, that if I could have just relaxed into who I was divinely, then what could have been, but you can't live there. I'm learning how to do it now, and how to really maximize the opportunities that God is giving me now, and then try to be a light that shines on other people and that gives that to them.
So I had one more topic to bring up, but I think I'm going to hold it for when you and I are together on May 16th,
okay.
Because okay. I think that the fact that you ended on the notion of creating space for yourself, not mm-hmm. just for others, is such a beautiful sentiment. I want to leave it there, unless there's something else that you want to say that brings us to a conclusion for today.
No, I think that that's the right thing, because when I think about, I've started putting a picture of myself as a child on my phone to remember to talk to that little girl that needed to know that it was safe and she's okay to be. And so I think that I wasn't planning to talk about that. So I feel like that might be a divine moment for us to say Selah and then reconnect.
I love it. Beautiful. Thank you, Rhonda, so much for being with me today. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us today for Awakening Lives. This is one more way the Spirituality Network connects people with resources for spiritual growth and depth, regardless of faith tradition. Through education and training, spiritual direction for individuals and groups, and community programs and events. Ecumenical and interfaith, the Spirituality Network honors diversity and does not proselytize. If you wish to know more about our programming, please visit spiritualitynetwork.org, where you'll find events such as the Jedi Series event that Rhonda and I will be doing together on May 16th, called Setting a Longer Table, and we will explore the skills needed to foster inclusion. We also have a special event for spiritual directors on April 27th on how to build your practice. And on May 11th, I'm really excited about a workshop we've titled Staying in the Moment, where we will bring in the principles of improvisation to help us to be truly present to one another. And I hope that you've already marked June 28th on your calendar for our contemplative concert. It should be a beautiful event of music and poetry at Linworth United Methodist Church. You'll find information about all of these on our website, as well as information sessions for our Wellstreams Awakening program that will start a new cohort in the fall. If you found this podcast meaningful, please like and share with friends and family, and join us again next month as we explore ways to awaken our lives and transform the world.